Gong.
Okay, we will call to order.
Senator.
And I want the audience to note this. The 100th meeting, this session of the House School Revenue Committee. We found that out yesterday when I asked staff to do some stats for our committee party last night. Found out that as of yesterday, we had had 99 meetings. So, this morning, we are convening our 100th meeting. That's why we have donuts and coffee. And James, welcome. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Let's begin with a public hearing on Senate Bill 188. Work session. Did I say public hearing? I misspoke. Whew. Okay, James.
Senate Bill 188 authorizes the Economic and Community Development Department to establish a work group to study lending practices of financial institutions in rural and economically distressed regions and the effectiveness of tax credits and other incentives to financial institutions. The work group will present its findings at the next legislative session.
All right. Well, we are in work session, but I am pleased to welcome our colleagues from the Senate. Senator Gordley, this is your bill. Senator Farioli, who wants to go first?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Avelle Gordley, and I represent Senate District 10 in Portland, which includes neighborhoods in Northeast and Southeast Portland. And I am very pleased to be before you today with my good friend and colleague from John Day. We continue our partnership to identify and support the needs of our urban and rural distressed communities. We continue to find barriers that need to be broken down. We are looking at ways that we can fund local economic and community development projects, and that's what brings this particular initiative before you. We want the local mom-and-pop businesses and local community businesses to be able to grow and develop, but too often financial backing is not available because of how certain entrepreneurial efforts are looked at in terms of risk. In the Senate Revenue Committee, we heard of numerous opportunities from communities and businesses in Eastern Oregon, Warm Springs, and also in my district in Northeast Portland, opportunities that died or were delayed for lack of financial backing. The fact still is that sometimes it's easier to get a loan for a new car than it is to get a home loan or get a loan for a business startup. I really want to thank the work group that developed out of this piece of legislation. It was a work group convened by the good senator from John Day, and I want to say their names because I appreciate so much the efforts to date. Included the senator from Springfield, Lee Beyer, included the senator from Coos Bay, Tim Martinez from the Bankers Association, Robin Roberts and Fred Atimo from the Portland Development Commission, Michael Mason from the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. In fact, they have another piece of legislation related to Enterprise Zone.
We know it well.
Mr. Chair, that we need to talk about that legislation that needs to move, and I'll get off that now and talk about it with you later. Mark Houston from the Economic Development Department, Mitch Conley, Bruce Panosky, President of Community Bank, and then Robert McCain, President of Albina Community Bank, where I'm also a member of the board. The work group, in its initial efforts, have concluded that a fundamental problem is finding businesses to make loans in distressed areas, and that more businesses also need to be willing to invest and outsource businesses to rural areas. And Senator Farioli can speak to that piece of it very well. The work group is concerned that banks will still only approve bankable loans in distressed areas in order to maintain their bank's credit union. So what we have before us in the legislation before you is an opportunity, creating a work group to study the lending practices of financial institutions, so we don't have to make assumptions. We can find out what's really going on, study the practices in these rural and economically distressed urban areas, also study the effectiveness, the possible effectiveness of tax credits and other incentives to financial institutions, and then report those findings back to the next legislative session. I think by way of background, and before I conclude, Mr. Chair, I just want to briefly highlight some of the other initiatives that Senator Farioli and I have worked together on. In the 1997 session, we worked together with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department to redefine the criteria that now defines what is a rural or urban distressed area, the actual index or indicators that tell us what areas we should be targeting. And then in 1999, we helped redefine the work of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department to get more resources into these same communities, communities that had been left behind in Oregon's so-called economic boom. And a part of that legislation in 99 was the establishment of regional investment boards, and these boards are up and working in our own, in my own area. Our investment board had a little over $2 million to put into communities, and that process is working well. We have visited one another's communities. We understand each other's communities' needs well. We understand the critical need for support for entrepreneurship. And so we are partnering again to get this study done. And again, let's find out what practices are really taking place out there in our communities instead of making assumptions, and then fashion our public policy if need be after that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fact of the matter is that we've got about four curves that cross here, and we're trying to get a picture that may be inaccurately portrayed currently. You've all heard this, the epithet, there's statistics, there's lies, to, what is it, statistics and damn lies, or however it goes. Anyway,
that'll work for this morning.
There's lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics, Mark Twain. The fact of the matter is that we know that all of the financial institutions, whether credit unions or commercial banks, are meeting the requirements of the Community Reinvestment Act statistics. They are making the kinds of volume of loans in distressed communities that they're required to do under the federal government. Yet there is a persistent belief in the communities that are distressed that credit is less available there than elsewhere. And the questions that we need to have answered are, how can we get to the bottom of that issue? Is it a perception problem? Is it a perception problem on the fact, on the part of the public or on the part of borrowers? Do incentives actually work to create lending opportunities anywhere? Now, the idea of a tax incentive, which is what we have to offer in many cases, may not be the thing that the bank needs to make the decision or the credit union needs to make the decision to make the loan. So if the tax incentives are effective, we need to know that. If they're not effective, we need to know what incentives might be effective. And that's going to take a little bit more headwork than we've got so far invested in this question. The other thing is lender or borrowers persistently tell us that they have less access to credit in rural and distressed areas. We want to know whether that's related to technical problems. Are those people making loan applications with poor business planning, their idea that they can sell to a lender for the credit decisions that they need? So if it's a technical problem, we need to know, you know, what technical tools need to be brought. If it's a perception problem, We want to work on those things. Do incentives really work, or some other things? We all know that there are three C's of credit. That's character, capacity, and collateral. There may be a fourth C, and that should be credit history. In some cases, entrepreneurs that want to start businesses simply have no business loan credit history. They may have credit history in terms of buying a home or a car, but in terms of capitalizing a business, possibly that's a weak link. We need to look at that and talk about lending practices. The other thing is, in some cases, in distressed communities, the folks that need the money the most don't have a credit history. So, you know, lenders may be reluctant to make those kinds of decisions. Often I hear from lenders, there just aren't any projects in this community to lend on. And, you know, the fact is, anecdotally, we hear from people all the time that say, geez, I'm trying to get a loan, but I can't find anybody that's interested. Why is there a disconnect between demand for credit and the supply of credit in rural and distressed areas? We've talked to lenders, and candidly, they tell you that they are a bit reluctant to lend where the risks are higher. And if you've got high unemployment and market conditions that can be very volatile in terms of natural resource-based communities, you can see how that natural reluctance would add up to possibly fewer loan approvals. And it's one of those catch-22 situations. If there was more credit available for business development, there'd be more business developing in the service sectors, which would, we hope, create recirculation in the community and improve the business climate and lower the unemployment. It's like turning a battleship. But, you know, we've decided we don't want another study to put on the shelf. What we want is some answers to questions that we think are real questions that exist both in urban areas that are distressed and in rural communities that have high unemployment related to natural resource and environmental issues. So that, in probably too many words, is why we need the Senate Bill 188.
Very good. Questions? Representative Brown.
Thank you. Senators, in your discussion, did you talk about existing loan guarantee programs that are there and whether additional loan guarantee programs would help or serve any need?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, we did talk about the various existing federal and state guarantee programs. We looked at Oregon Economic Development Department's participation loans. We looked at programs available through the federal government for all sorts of different participation loans. There are, in fact, a large menu of programs available where a private lender might have the capstone money to put together a project, or their public and private financial opportunities for putting together financing packages. They work on larger scale projects. What we don't seem to have is a readily available source of capital for people who would like to, in fact, capitalize a job, either in a rural community or a distressed community.
Representative Kapoor.
Thank you. This is more of a comment. I'd just like to thank both of you for bringing forward this legislation, and thank you for all the work that you've done for rural Oregon and distressed areas of urban areas. I, as you know, represent one of those distressed areas in Portland, and appreciate the good work that Albina Community Bank in particular has done. That was a great effort to get that bank going. Thank you, Senator Gordley, and keep it in its current shape. But we do know, and I know from talking with constituents, that there's still plenty of need out there, and I appreciate you bringing forward this legislation. Thank you.
One question I would have, and it's not so much a question, but just an observation. Representative Brown asked about loan guarantee, and I know you're hamstrung by the relating clause since it comes in with relating to financial institution tax credits, so that's what it says, that the group will determine whether tax credits or other related tax-related incentives. And I'm just curious, I hope that the group doesn't consider itself to be too hamstrung by that specific charge, so that it feels unable to look at other possible incentives that might just be out there besides those specific tax incentives. And I understand, like I said, because of the relating clause, I assume that's why it's limited to tax incentives, but to the extent that a brainstorm might bring to light some other incentives that would work as well or better, I hope that they'll Bill Bold, and go ahead and go on beyond just the particular church. I see there's no criminal penalty or civil penalty for exceeding the charge of what group is in.
Well, Mr. Chair, we appreciate your observation, and certainly with both Senator Farioli and I planning to be involved in this work group effort, we will not be placing any kind of limitation on our brainstorming and thinking.
And Mr. Chairman, like most legislators in this process, Senator Gordley and I have agreed to utterly ignore the implications of the relating clause. The fact is that we need to put tax incentives in perspective against all other incentives. Yeah. And when we do that continuum, we have an opportunity to discuss all those things. The fact is that lenders are telling us that they make their decision on a bottom line basis, and it's about renting money and earning income from the renting of money. So the tax incentive may in fact be the smallest opportunity or incentive that we have to offer, maybe almost immaterial to the decision. And if that's the case, we need to know what works, and we have to ask the industry what works.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fay.
This is a good bill. I'm like glad it's coming forward. I guess my question is about the relating clause again as well. Do you anticipate this group being focused solely on tax incentives for lenders? Or do you, I mean, we've passed a handful of tax credits that help, I think, primarily rural, that are directed at rural communities. We also are still talking about the pollution control tax credit, and we've passed the single sales factor, and I think the Senate's passed capital gains tax cut. Yeah, all fine piece of legislation. We haven't seen the capital gains. I guess we did in the BAT. We talked about the capital gains tax. But I'm wondering if you're going to look at these other tools and what impact they're having or could have on rural and distressed communities, or are you just looking at incentives for lenders to come into these communities?
Mr. Chairman, to represent the excellent question, no, we're not going to really put any sideboards on it. I mean, the matter of fact is that if we were looking at a project through Oregon Economic Development Department, and if there were financing connected to creation of jobs, it would be an identifiable factor for investment of public funds to create a certain number of jobs. It would be a ratio established. We don't have anything like that for entrepreneurs and for individuals who have just created jobs. We know that capitalizing job-creating opportunities in rural and distressed areas is expensive. And it's the infilling opportunities, the small-scale projects, the one- and two-job businesses that we think may be the best opportunity for the most immediate gain. And in that case, you know, where the tax incentive might be applied could be to the individual as well as to the corporation. And so there are no sideboards, and that's an excellent question. I don't think we're even going to stop at the idea of tax incentives. We're really looking for what will increase the availability of credit in rural and distressed areas, make it easier.
Mr. Chairman, I've spent a lot of time in Wallowa County this past year and with the county commissioners and some of the economic development folks up there. And one thing that in the community, they went from 20% unemployment 3 months ago, they're now down to 14% in two little timber, their only mills. One of them is, I think, your company's mill. You know, they open up, hire a few jobs, and the unemployment rate drops by a third. I guess one thing that's frustrating to me when I talk to folks up there is the lack of discussion about incentives for new economy jobs. It's still the same old discussion. There's a lot of hand-wringing about the old jobs that we've lost and aren't coming back, and let's get those jobs back. And there's some people who talk about, well, if we just had a couple of 5 to 10 people businesses. But I would hope that this will help engage those communities to talk about what do we not have here. You know, just talking about Wallowa County because I spent some time there. But any of these communities, what types of new, how, what is it going to take to get new economy jobs here that are, you know, involve telecom, needs and whatever tax incentives are needed to bring those types of businesses into those communities. But I don't hear that from the economic development folks up there. I mean, they, when you talk to them about it, oh, yeah, yeah, sure, sure, we're interested, but it's not at the top of their head. And maybe this process will help bring insight into how tax incentives can bring the modern economy to these communities.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to Representative Speck's other excellent question, we're hacking away at the issue of connectivity, which gives capacity for the telecommuter type jobs or the new economy type jobs. That's becoming a reality, and over time it will, in fact, connect all parts of Oregon to access to the internet for high speed digital transmission. I think, just to answer your question, the day that I can go to the Portland International Airport and for a $100 one way ticket fly to any state airport on a regular schedule,
right,
today I'll be able to tell you,
right,
we have an equal opportunity to participate in the global economy for the kind of jobs that people can do from any location in the state of Oregon. The people still are having the same problems that we've always had in rural areas, and it's time and distance. Transportation networks being what they are, people would love to live outside of the metro area and in some of the incredibly beautiful settings we have in Oregon. But the transportation issues and just physically getting from place to place, it's necessary and difficult. So when we can solve that problem, I can look in the eye and say, look, we've got a state airport system that the state economic development strategy supports so that people can actually move from and to their remote locations in rural Oregon with ease and speed, then we'll have an opportunity to compete. There's a whole different set of situations that need to be looked at in the urban areas. And I think most of those things are perceptual, and there are institutional barriers that have just grown up over time. We need to revisit them.
Okay. Representative Hass, you haven't said anything. That's fine.
Want a motion?
Let's do.
Anybody else you want to testify? Or
we're ready to vote.
I would, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
I would move Senate Bill 188A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much, Representative Beck. We'll move Senate Bill 188A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Bay.
Excused.
Bass.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Hatt.
Aye.
Williams.
Excused. Excused.
Vice
Chair Carlson. Excused.
Aye.
Chair Shatterly.
Aye. Senate Bill 188 goes to the floor of the due pass.
And with a unanimous vote.
Unanimous vote.
Yes, I did.
Which is pretty good for this time of the session.
Representative Beck, thanks for moving the bill. Committee, thanks for hearing the bill.
Now,
thank you.
We need a carrier.
Okay, right.
Representative Kafouri.
That's wonderful.
You have to the stressed area. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, please don't forget that other little bill that's of interest to
thank you very much.
Thank you.
What's that other one?
2131.
Oh, God.
Okay, now, committee, it's decision time before we do anything here. We have HJR 64 on the agenda. It takes a two-thirds majority vote of the committee to suspend the rules to bring the bill back. We don't have two-thirds of the committee here. We got Representative Williams upstairs and Representative Bates and Carlson in Ways and Means. But let me just kind of give you a peek under the tent to what we would see. The Department of Justice is here with, they've been back to their book of problems, and they found another one that they want to present to us. And that is an Armada issue that Mr. Chamov says is not a problem. So we're back to that again. And I don't know, I'll take it from the five of us that are here whether we even want to bring this thing back up or whether we're all tired of dealing with it and work these things out in the interim. I
have two comments.
I've got a headache. My head hurts. What?
We're
freewheeling. We're not in work session or anything here, gentlemen.
You're stunned by my pool expertise.
Yes,
last night.
For the record,
your head is reeling. From
that's true. Representative Beck and I knocked down Ramona and Representative Hass and
Bates.
Oh, Bates.
It's only because I didn't stick around for this whole game work.
You notice how guys with their own pool table tend to win more often.
You know what? Yeah. I did not sink a single ball. I got into the game late.
I did all his dirty work for him.
Just like...
Yeah, right.
What?
On the Armada issue, I mean, could we do a constitutional revision and get 40 and 20 votes and... Does that wipe out the Armada problem if there is truly one?
Yeah, that also means we'd have to basically reverse the vote that we got on the floor the first time this was up.
That's true. That's right. It's been as more complicated. I guess the other comment is, because I've opposed this or voted no in committee, mainly for these very reasons. Like, this is a big deal. And I'm uncomfortable moving something this important and putting something on the ballot where there are some uncertainties and maybe we need to get it to the House so the Senate can kill it if that is the plan, but I know that happens sometimes in this building. I with Representative Witt gone, if Chair's desire is to move bill, I'd be happy to give the votes or give a vote to get it out if that's what you want to do. But I do think dealing with the common school fund and this concept, while it's worth talking about, I'm just a little nervous this late in the session moving it back and to the floor and a lot of uncertainty and back again and and comes the state lands and the attorney general, and I don't know, it just all makes me kind of uncomfortable. My own personal thoughts.
Let me ask, is anybody just hell-bent to get this bill out back to the floor? Representative before?
I've been a supporter of this concept from the get-go, as have you been, Mr. Chair, and I think that... it's still very worthy of deliberation, but I do agree with Representative Beck that this is a really big deal, and I'd rather us spend the time to get it right and do a good job and have it pass and have it be something that we look at and be proud of, and you know, when it's done, instead of having something that we push through and there's problems with it, and or I mean, even just to push it through so it dies over the Senate, that's not my goal. So I think that if there are still concerns and we're still debating over the language and whether we've got it, you know, the Armada, whatever. So I'm fine with not moving the bill.
Representative Brown, you okay with that?
I just seconded that. I just followed that.
Okay. Well, in that case, before I adjourn the meeting, I saw Kate Wentz when I referred to DOJ's Book of Problems. I do want to acknowledge Ms. Hannes and Kate Richardson also in helping identify some and helping draft some of these last minute amendments on this thing. I think they've demonstrated a willingness to work on this, as has DOJ. I think we're not there yet to run this out as a consensus effort, and perhaps with some of the technical issues that we can work out, that can be better done in the interim, and let's add that to the list of interim projects for the committee. I'd really like to see this go. And with that,
well, Mr. Chair,
yes,
we are setting the stabilization measure out.
Well, are we? Is the Senate moving on that?
They haven't moved on it yet.
Yeah. So who knows? If they do, you're right. That would probably put a hold on this, at least until we get a vote on that. But I don't know. I'm sort of skeptical whether that one makes it out of the Rules Committee over there. But we'll see. We will.
It seems like the biggest practical problem for this one is that it failed 37-23. And
right.
Unless there's been a sea change in your caucus, yeah. I don't know.
Remember that 519 did pass out of this committee.
What's that?
I was reminding Representative Haas that Senate Bill 519 did finally receive its 5 votes.
Yeah, what's that going to do with it?
That will free up bills over there?
Oh, I don't think so.
It may have changed some votes in the...
We sent it to the floor and it's back again.
In the House floor. Yes.
And then we moved it, you know...
No, it came back.
On Monday, it was...
And Monday, we voted it back out with the...
Oh, that's right.
So it needs to be withdrawn.
It needs to be withdrawn. That takes a two-thirds? Or is that taking... It takes 45 minutes. Come on. Okay, let's stand at ease while Joan checks with Ramona.
Wake up, Ramona.
Yes.